The Young and Healthy Podcast. You're listening to the Cincinnati Children's Young and Healthy Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cincinnati Children's Young and Healthy Podcast. I am your gracious host, Beau McMillan. And this week, we are going to be talking about marijuana edibles and what parents should know. With me today in the studio to discuss this topic is Dr. Shan Yin, Medical Director of the Cincinnati Drug and Poison Information Center. Dr. Yin, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Bo?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for taking the time to join with us today. I know that this is a topic on the minds of a lot of parents, and there's a lot of information and misinformation out there that I think is going to be very interesting for us to clear up.
Yeah, I'm happy to discuss it with you.
So I guess to start off, tell us a little bit about what you do as a medical director. What is the Drug and Poison Information Center, and what does your role within that look like?
So the Drug and Poison Information Center, I mean, I think most parents might think of it as the Poison Control Center, Poison Control, Poison Center. So we are a 24/7 organization that is available to both the public and healthcare professionals to provide expertise on poisonings. So for the public, that often is calls from home. A child may have gotten into something. Is this okay to stay at home? Should I go to the emergency room? That type of thing. And then from healthcare professionals, they may have people who have poison themselves unintentionally or intentionally. They need extra assistance in managing those things, diagnosing those things, just like they might call a cardiologist or a gastroenterologist. They're calling us as a toxicologist to assist in the management of those patients. Hmm. We're also available for outreach and education to, again, to the public and to healthcare professionals.
Yeah, so an important service. I always, when I think of the poison center, I always think of the refrigerator magnets with the phone number on it. So that's you guys.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And we still do have magnets, although nowadays with cell phones, we tell people, you know, hey, just go put in our phone number into your cell phone, and then you don't have to look at the magnet.
That's a great idea. Yeah, just to have it quickly, because I assume that a lot of times there are calls into the center. It's they're emergent. Most likely, probably, the parent, something's happened and the parent wants to talk to someone right away. So having it there on the phone is very convenient.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and one thing is that a lot of times I think we can help also reassure parents that what a child got into is not necessarily dangerous. So they don't have to rush to the emergency room. And that can save them a trip to the emergency room, a long wait in the emergency room, potentially a bill from the emergency room. So there's literature that if the poison centers didn't exist, that people would either call 911 or just go straight to the emergency room. Yeah. And oftentimes they don't have to.
Well, that's incredibly helpful. I'm sure that's something that parents are thankful for, like you said, a multitude of reasons. I'm sure that's going to come out more in our conversation, as we talk about marijuana, and we're going to talk about it in various forms, but particularly edibles. I think this is an especially relevant topic as recreational marijuana has recently been legalized in Ohio. And so I'm guessing from the Poison Center in, are you all expecting to see a rise in cases of children ingesting marijuana edibles? What are you preparing for now that that's been legalized?
Yeah, almost certainly that will happen. You can see basically in every state that legalizes marijuana, that happens. And we've already seen that in Ohio after the legalization of medical marijuana. So we saw marijuana exposures in children have risen dramatically since then. And we would expect that once recreational marijuana becomes more available, that we will see further rises in childhood exposures.
So let's talk a little bit about edible marijuana. I guess let's start. How is that absorbed into the body? How I would say, particularly with a younger child, how does the amount of, I'm guessing it's THC, is the active ingredient. How does the amount of THC in an edible affect a child? What are we looking at just on a very general high level note?
Yeah, so from edible products, generally THC has been extracted and then infused into the product. And so it's absorbed very well, we would say orally, just as a product that is eaten. And with children, so oftentimes one issue with kind of edible marijuana versus smoked marijuana is that the dosages of THC tend to be much higher.
In the edibles.
In the edible, that's correct, yeah. So with children just being smaller than an adult as well, that they simply don't need as much of it to kind of get the same effects and then an overdose. So that's, you know, one thing in toxicology is that the dose makes the poison. So almost anything that you can get, take too much of, and it'll be harmful. You can drink enough water that it would kill you. So with these edible marijuana products, that sometimes these things are designed to be multiple portion sizes, if you will. And a child might not realize that, might eat the whole thing, then they have essentially gotten too much.
Yeah, and what do you all typically see, let's say, in a child who has ingested marijuana? I'm sure it differs very depending on how large of a dose they got, but what are the side effects you typically see when you get that call or when you see them come into the emergency department?
Yeah, well, it's going to be a spectrum, again, depending on how much they've gotten. It can simply be that they are essentially high, and now they're not, a child now is not necessarily going to understand what's going on, and they just may be kind of spaced out, if you will, but somebody looking at them or might just think, well, they look like they are high. And then it could range all the way up to them essentially them being comatose. So just like if they had taken you know, drugs that can otherwise make you comatose, they can be completely unresponsive, usually breathing okay on their own, but otherwise unresponsive. And often at that time, then they would need to be intubated, which is just when we are putting a device in to make sure that they're breathing okay.
Yeah. And what are, I mean, it sounds like typically they end up being fine. So intubation, maybe it sounds like monitoring. What is the treatment typically for some? Is there treatment for this?
Yeah, so there is no antidote. And so the treatment in medical terms, simply we would say it was supportive. So we are supporting them. We are essentially treating any type of symptoms that might be need to be treated. So for instance, if somebody is very agitated, then we might give them a sedative. If somebody is vomiting, we might give them an antiemetic, something to help prevent vomiting. With marijuana, generally, there's not necessarily going to be a lot of treatment. It is mostly kind of monitoring. If they are comatose, you do run into the risk that you aren't fully protecting your airway. So your gag reflex is not fully intact, so that if you did, for instance, throw up, that you could suffocate if you weren't protecting your own airway. So the intubation in those cases is often what we say is to protect their airway, not necessarily to breathe for them, but to make sure they are maintaining their airway. And oftentimes with these, it's usually about, with the most serious ones, it's usually about 24 hours or so, and then we're able to extubate them. We're able to take that tube out.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, 24. That was going to be my next question, is the length of time. Getting hyper practical and going back to what we talked about at the start, what should parents do if they suspect their child has ingested marijuana? I'm assuming call the poison center. But what steps do you think they should take? How alarmed should they be? What do you recommend?
Yeah, I think calling the poison center is the easiest first step. I think if they are seriously worried about a breathing issue, then they should call 911. And the poison center may direct them to call 911. But that would be, I think, the first best step.
Kind of something similar, but just to kind of switch gears. So no parent wants their child to get into marijuana or any type of drugs. And, you know, we think about all the medications that can be in any given household, blood pressure medication, all these things that we don't want children to get a hold of. What would you advise parents who, especially now that recreational marijuana is legal, what would you advise them in terms of safe storage to make sure that their children don't get into this and they don't even, you know, get to a point where they need to call you all?
Yeah. So I think they should approach marijuana just like any other medication. So the first step is prevention. So this would include storing these things, we would say, out of sight and out of reach. So a child can't see them and can't get to them. Now, that's easier for a one-year-old than it is for a five-year-old. A five-year-old now will start climbing on things. So these are just things that parents need to think about. After kind of that first step of prevention, the next step of prevention would be child-resistant packaging. Hmm. And so that is regulated, I think, currently by Ohio law, that the medical marijuana products do need to be in child-resistant packaging. So that's, again, something that the parents need to be cognizant of, not necessarily opening something and then leaving the rest kind of available, but leaving it in that kind of that package. So those first two steps, again, are the most important in terms of just preventing the child from getting into it. I think it's reasonable to also, at some point when the child gets old enough, just to have that conversation between parent and child about what's right and what's wrong in terms of leaving these type of things alone.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that. There are two points I want to circle back to, but I'm very interested in that conversation because at some point when the child is old enough to be able to fully understand right and wrong and what they should and shouldn't do, it should be necessary to have that conversation with them. Do you have any tips for parents looking to talk to their kids about this topic?
I would say that they should use available resources to them. So I think their own pediatrician can probably be very helpful to that. I think probably I would say just being very honest with their child. I mean, I think children are very, very smart. They can kind of just figure things out and tell when maybe they might be being deceived or something like that. So just being honest with that child. They, in fact, may see the parents using the product and that may, they may say, well, why can't I do that? And so, again, just having that frank, honest conversation with them.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful information. I'm sure it's not easy being a parent navigating something like this. You know, there's so many topics that we talk about on this podcast alone that are just really tricky. And this is another one where, you know, we're talking about a now legal substance that does have potentially harmful side effects, especially for smaller children, which that's any number of medications in the household, like you mentioned. I think it's a particularly interesting conundrum because when it comes to marijuana edibles, a lot of these in terms of packaging and even the form they come in are enticing to children, right? You see the colorful packaging or you see, you know, them come in the form of brownies or Rice Krispie treats or, you know, colorful gummies. Do you see that as, I guess, a need for extra caution by the parents? I guess that's my first question. Do you see that as a need for extra caution by the parents? And two, do you see that as a need, a larger need to be addressed? I don't want to say from a legal level necessarily, but what lawmakers should know as we start to legalize these products that could be more enticing to kids?
Yeah, for sure. As far as the second point goes, I mean, so legislatively, yeah, for sure. So currently, as I understand the Ohio law for medical marijuana packaging, it does say things like you can't depict cartoons, you can't, there can't be any false, misleading statements. I don't necessarily know for sure whether they are, they talk about, for instance, color and mm-hmm. that type of thing. But that definitely has been seen in other states where, yes, for whatever reason, these manufacturers will put these things in products that, as you described, look very enticing to a child. And so that is definitely, in my opinion, an issue that the legislature needs to address. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say that legislation like this thing, these that type of thing, often is very helpful. I mean, if there's one thing that really helped reduce dangerous childhood ingestions, it was the Poisoning Prevention Act. It mm-hmm. was a national law that mandated that you needed to have things in child-resistant containers. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
And so the same thing. These things should be treated very, in my mind, sterilely, like a medication. I mean, our pill bottles don't have cartoons and mm-hmm. and bright colors on them. So it should be the same thing. And so, yeah, I, and as far as the parent goes, I mean, they need just to recognize that. If the package looks like that, that's, again, that first step of keeping it out of sight. Then the parent, the child doesn't see that type of imagery. And to know that, yeah, if it, obviously if it looks like a brownie, that child is going to be more inclined to eat that than as opposed to just a pill on the ground. Mm-hmm.
So all the more reason for parents to be alert and to be smart about how they're storing this, how they're talking to their kids about it. And again, knowing what to do in the case of an ingestion, and having the poison center's phone number close by in the phone. I think that's still such good advice. I want to shift gears just a little bit, still keeping on the topic of substances, but you know, maybe including marijuana and other prescription drugs. So you talked a lot about medications just in the household and how you know, edibles should be treated very similarly in terms of safe packaging and keeping it out of the way of kids. But in addressing just the plethora of medications that could be in any one household, and especially when it comes to those medications maybe being expired or, you know, no longer necessary, what advice would you give for parents in terms of proper disposal of maybe outdated prescriptions or anything like that? Or if there are edibles or anything else in the household that they no longer want, obviously just throwing it in the trash probably isn't a great solution. How would you direct them there?
So there are a couple avenues that a parent can take to dispose of medications. The first is that there is what's called a National Drug Take Back Day, where different organizations, a lot of times they will be police departments, will have a day where anybody can take any medication to them and they will dispose of it properly. That can actually happen every day. So it doesn't have to be just on that one day. It's just on that one day, there are more organizations that are available. Every other day, there are organizations that are available to take drugs back. And that information, one can easily Google if you look Google kind of drug prescription take back, and I think it's on the Department of Justice website. But so that's the first kind of, that's probably the most proper way to do it. You can throw things away. Now, if you throw things away, what's advised is to put them to mix it with something kind of very noxious or undesirable. Oftentimes, what's kind of used as an example is used kitty litter.
Okay.
I mean, a used diaper, I think, would be equally noxious. So to mix it in with a product like that, then put it in kind of a sealed container or bag, and then dispose of it in the trash. What is advised against is flushing medications down the toilet. Hmm. One reason for that is because we can detect very, very low levels of drugs in the municipal water supply. And so how that may affect everybody drinking these things is not entirely clear, but that's something we would want to avoid. And then just throwing them away kind of in the trash without any kind of other safeguards certainly could lead to children or other people getting into these things accidentally. Mm-hmm. And while ingesting, for instance, something like marijuana probably won't kill you, there certainly are pills which can be lethal to children in very, very small doses. Sure. Even a single pill of some medications might cause a death in a child, and in fact might cause a death in an adult.
So probably worth it for parents to maybe go through their medication cabinets and take stock of what they have and maybe what they don't need to have in the household anymore, and follow proper disposal methods. If they've got a baby or a cat, they can take care of it that way. I think that that's really good advice about disposing of something noxious. Otherwise, I think you know, that's really practical advice of just Googling with drug take back and proper, proper disposal of that. But yeah, probably a good idea to not have a lot of medication around the house that's just not needed.
Yes, for sure. I think especially with prescription opioids, this was often a thing. I think the medical community is better about this, but the medical community used to give 30 days of your oxycodone and you would use 2 days of it and then you would have a month's supply of this and then it would just be in people's homes. And we're better about that. But certainly, yes, there are medications that that could be very dangerous. And so, yeah, disposing of what is not needed is I think, an important idea.
Yeah, that's great. Dr. Yin, thank you so much for being with us today. I want to give you one more chance to plug the Poison Center. If you could tell us again the type of services you provide, how it can be helpful to parents, and give us the phone number for them to put in their phone.
Yeah, so the Poison Center is available 24 hours a day. The phone number is 1-800-222-1222. And we are available to answer questions from parents about medications and overdoses. We're available to assist them in if their child or themselves get into anything. And we're available to healthcare professionals to provide a consultation as well.
That sounds excellent. Dr. Yin, thank you so much again for being with us. And I'm sure that we will have you back sometime soon.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Young and Healthy Podcast. This episode was recorded on March 6th, 2024. The content of the Young and Healthy Podcast is for informational and educational purposes. Our theme music was created by Stephen Grieco. This episode was produced by Kayla McNeil.
Thanks for listening. Follow Cincinnati Children's on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.